You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats?
Hodgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modge Podge. Whole Modge Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modge Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Eby. With me, as always, Dave Goss. We are here for the 5th and the final special here in the ETR extravaganza as preseason opens in MLS. Dave, average numbers of hours of sleep you're getting per night this week.
It doesn't matter. I don't sleep because when I'm not sleeping, all I think about is Extra Time Radio.
It just is like a loop playing in your
also,
head?
You didn't say via Manhattan Beach, which you say people forgot.
That we were in Manhattan Beach?
Yeah, you just kept saying it and kept saying it
Oh, man. Somebody could have told me that.
I just did.
You did. Look, we have Jason Christ coming up here. Go back and listen to all the shows. It's all good stuff. Monday, our Eastern Conference whip around as preseason opens. Hear what we think about all 11 teams out east. Tuesday, Dominic Kinnear, Mauro Biello, special 1v1s from, where did we do those? Via Manhattan Beach. And then on Tuesday, Wilmer Cabrera, the head coach of the Houston Dynamo. Oscar Pareja, the head coach of FC Dallas, give you an all-Texas Derby edition. Thursday, the Western Conference whip around. And Friday, we're here. Jason Kreis, the full interview. It's good stuff. Dave, let's send him right to it. California Living out here with Jason Kreis, Andrew Wiebe, David Goss, Extra Time Radio. Coming right at you. Jason, welcome to the set. You're the 6th or 7th coach that's rolled through. It's the best of the best, believe me.
Does that make me 6th in the draft order? Picked me 6th?
Do you want to be 6th in the draft order?
It's a little lower than I probably would have preferred to be.
Yeah.
Where would you pick yourself?
I wouldn't pick myself at all. It's your job to do the picking.
That's true. All right. No, we don't do any picking. We just prognosticate. There's a big difference between the two. So I'm. You can't see it out there, folks, but there's a big hotel lobby. Are you a Star Wars fan, Jason, at all?
Yes. I love Star Wars as a child.
Okay.
Sure.
So if
and
I
all
say...
all the characters, little characters.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
Star Wars Cantina, if that's what I'm comparing the MLS Combine Superdraft hotel lobby to...
I'm thinking about all the weird characters and odd-shaped mutant genes that are out there. I suppose you're probably exactly right.
Yeah, it's pretty close. What's it like down there? I mean, that's one of the most fascinating parts about these events that fans out there don't know, that the agents converge on these things. Uh-huh. The players from the Combine are milling around. All the coaching staffs.
Yeah. it's odd, right? I mean, I think it's something that the first night I was there, the first night, Friday night, we got in. There wasn't a big group. There was still a lot of MLS folks, especially coaching staff and such that wasn't here yet. And so hung out, enjoyed a little bit of conversation with some people that you don't see that often. And I think it's always great to be around the people that you compete with every week during a stressful MLS season, to be around those people in a social environment. I think it's a terrific thing. I think it brings us closer together and can shed some of the animosity that goes around the jobs that we do against each other. But as the week goes along, I tire of that pretty quickly. and it's an area that I try to get through as quickly as possible, especially when it comes to just moving through there throughout the days, because the agents tend to do a little too much swarming. And I don't think that's the right atmosphere to be talking about any of that type of business. So I tend not to hang out there as the week goes along. But again, it doesn't take away from the fact that I enjoy spending time with my competitors in a much more relaxed and social atmosphere.
How do the agents come at you down there? How does the agent process normally work? Because that's another part that folks don't really realize. Yeah. You're getting calls, you're getting pitched on players, they're trying to get information, they're trying to maybe shift things around.
Mostly the part that particularly I don't like is the selling of players, international players. You got agents want to come up to you and talk to you about player X, Y, and Z that plays somewhere that you've never heard of, or trying to attract your attention about those players. And I think actually, factually, some of that has gone down as the years have gone along. I can remember, it doesn't seem like too long ago, where the agents were down there with big packets full of DVDs to hand you. And so that you're leaving the Combine every year with 3 bags packed full of DVDs
now
and
having
to carry
YouTube
that. Yeah, now it's all internet-based, so it's mainly just names and a few statistics. And from my point of view, if you're having to do that with a player, it's probably not the right category of player, the right type of player that should be able to add something to your team where we are in MLS now.
So Peter Vermees was sitting in that chair, and he told me that, well, he told us, I should say. I'm sorry, Dave.
No, it's okay.
Or 8 years ago, it was like 20% players they'd personally scouted and identified, and about 80% guys they'd been pitched on.
Yeah.
And now it's flip-flopped, and it's 80-20. And he said, look, I can't speak for other teams, but that's how it is for us.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
I think that's very individualized team to team based on the resources that they have to plug into their scouting department as well as the time that they have. And as well as also how much time the staff has spent together to clearly understand the roles of what we do aside from coaching. In our league, I think we still have very much dual roles. We're a coach the entire season, and then when it comes close to the transfer window in the summer and it comes close to the transfer window again in the winter, you're very much a scout. And I think that some of the teams that are a little bit further along in their development have roles that are probably a little bit more clearly defined so that scouts do the scouting and coaches do the coaching. And I think that's the model that we're all moving towards. And so interesting that Peter says he, 80-20, probably an ideal world. He's doing no scouting, and the scouts are doing that and just bringing him a couple of players. But I would agree with that when I started in 2007, I had no idea how I was going to find an international player. So 100% of the players that were being recommended were coming from scouts, and only by experiencing and traveling to different countries do you start to become connected as to what that marketplace looks like, and you can start to do a little bit more forward thinking and be a little bit more proactive in that process to find the players that you like and then be asking the agents for information.
You mentioned 2007 at RSL, you had a chance to build that scouting department out, build your setup. How long does that take? How long do you think it takes to build a process that you can really trust?
Well, I think you're right in saying it takes time, but I think before it takes time, it takes money. It takes resources. And I think to a varying degree, again, the MLS teams have scouting departments. Scouting departments for some teams are one person, and scouting departments for other maybe 6 or 10. I'm not quite sure. But, all of us are recognizing that that's a big area that we need to improve on. Through my travels internationally, this year I was able to go down to Brazil and be very much interconnected with Atlético Paranaense, which we now have a partnership with, and to get an idea of what is the ideal club setup, what does the ideal scouting structure look like. I think we're still a ways away from that. I think if we're all honest with ourselves, I think all of us are still a ways away from that.
I had a chance to actually be with some of the Paranaense staff as well. They were here for a youth tournament, and I've learned about and talked about how forward-thinking they are in Brazil, mm-hmm. and how efficient they have been. What was that experience like? What's that connection like?
It's terrific. It's really terrific, and it's early days. It's in its infancy. The relationship is very much in its infancy, but I would say that the one thing that I walked away from that experience was what it gave me a real clear snapshot of what we in Orlando City, what all the clubs in MLS should really be striving for. And that is to have a training facility that's big enough, number of fields, number of rooms that they have in their residency program, schooling on site, food on site, restaurant, full-time restaurant for breakfast, lunch, and dinner for the players that live there, to gym, to pool, to being able to handle all of the needs of all of the players from youth through professional and under one umbrella. And then to go further behind sort of the backroom staff and the numbers of people that are involved in the scouting department, to the video analysis department, to the player performance department and fitness and medical. I walked away from that with a real clear snapshot of where we should be trying to get to, and it's going to take time and it's going to take a lot of resources.
People hear head coach, they see you on the sideline and they think, oh yeah, this guy's he's doing training, he's coaching all the time. But you hear things like this, and that's not it. That's part of it, but there's a big pie chart you're filling in. Do you like this part of the season? Do you like that sort of like administration, planning, future?
Yeah. I do. I enjoy it. I've learned over the years that what seemed extremely painful for me as a young coach to go through some of that or try to digest that information is much different than it is now. And I think it's just part of being a human. You learn to adapt. You learn to be able to take on more information. You learn to be able to work longer hours. You learn to be able to split your focus into different areas. And so I would say that it's something that I enjoy. Do I enjoy it as much as being on the field and coaching the players? No, I
can't
don't.
Imagine
not
it.
Yet. So yeah. I still want to be a coach.
Where does coaching and playing stand for you? Because Dominic Gamir said coaching's as close as you can get to playing. But do you prefer coaching, playing? Where do you stand?
Again, I think perspective is everything. And so right now, as I'm in the trenches of coaching and how difficult and stressful it seems, I would tell you, I'd be a player 100 times out of 100. Are you kidding me? I mean, go to the training facility an hour before training and leave an hour after it's done. That's a fantastic life. And to actually have a real off season where you get to be on your own schedule and spend all your time with your wife and your kids, I miss that for sure. And I miss the short intensive days, and I miss the on-field match experiences. Where as a coach, my personal feeling is that the matches are sometimes the most painful thing of the entire week, because essentially what you do is you spend an entire week to prepare a team, put all this work into preparing your team to face an opponent, and the analysis of the opponent, and the training session, the training stress and preparation, and the video meetings, and everything that you do in the week. You've so much time and energy, and then you go out there and you say, okay, guys, you do it.
Yeah.
And you almost have zero control during the 90 minutes, and that's painful. That's for me anyway.
Ball can spin off a post.
A little bit of a control freak.
Yeah, there would be a call. I mean, anything could happen.
Yeah.
What internally, what's going on in there during a game? Do you have to hold yourself back? Do you have to be?
Yes.
Do you feel like, I'm going to go kick that water bottle, but you don't do it because obviously you can't?
That speaks to kind of the difference between player and coach, because as a player, I would still have all that same stress and same anxiety about, you know, taking care of my body and wanting to do the right thing by the coach and wanting to please the fans and win. And you'd go out there, and during the 90 minutes was the full release of all that. You know, you'd have all that anxiety going into the opening whistle, and as soon as the opening whistle went, it was like full release of all that.
It's an outlet.
Right, yeah. And as a coach, there's no release to it. And so you would like to be able to go fully release that, but you're still stressed and stressed and stressed, and probably to a higher degree for that 90 minutes. And I can tell you, the number of headaches that you have after a game, really severe headaches, is crazy.
Is that stress? Is that just kind of... The pressure of it all?
Yeah, it's just kind of everything. I think it's everything without having the ability to just let it out.
Right.
Let it out.
You don't have that physical outlet.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. It's that physical outlet.
May 2007, you go from having that to being the youngest head coach in MLS at RSL. Tell me about that process. Tell me how it came together. Dave Checkets comes to you. What happens here? You say, hey, this is something I'm interested in. Are you scared? Are you nervous? Are you...
Yeah. Gosh, it was 2006, I think the middle of 2006. Dave had come. It was the year that we played Real Madrid in Salt Lake City. Massive experience. He had come in for that match and wanted to talk to me about what's next in your career. We had established a really, really good relationship from the very first time that I met him on the press conference to be announced as the first ever RSL player. And periodically, when he would come in town, we would typically get together for something, and we got together for a coffee, and he was asking me what I wanted to do next. And he was essentially saying to me, I view you as a general manager type. I view you as somebody that I think would be excellent in that role. Is that something that would interest you? And I said, no. Actually, I'd be real interested in coaching. I think I was about 31 when I got my B license. They came to Dallas, and I was part of that course and really enjoyed that, and really had enjoyed every experience as a young person working with kids and just that coaching, teaching stuff. I liked it. And so I was already thinking about, I think I want to be a coach. And so we had a meeting about that, and he challenged me on that because his basketball history was that the coaches that have come from being really good players typically make the worst coaches. And so he was saying to me, I think you're going to be a terrible coach. And I said to him that I thought that I was in a different category than some of those elite basketball players, and that I never really found anything that I did as a player to be elite. I think that my elite skill was how much I wanted it and how hard I was willing to work for it. And those two things, I think, put me in I was selling that I think that those two things gave me an ability to connect with players and want to develop players and work with players and get the best out of them, because I thought that players that were a little bit substandard in skills and talent and physical ability could still be good players.
Score 108 goals, maybe.
Case
in
point.
Yeah.
And so we talked through that, and there was a plan, actually, that was put in place where I would retire and become the assistant coach to John Ellinger for a year or 2 years. And then potentially he would become the GM. He would step away from that, and then I would become the head coach. And so that was the plan that was put in place, and it was actually the next preseason where John and I sat down and talked about that plan because Dave had talked to him about that plan. So we were all on the same page about what that plan looked like. And that was the preseason 2007. And then lo and behold, four games into the season of 2007, we started out really badly, and the direction looked really bad. And I think we lost a home game to Colorado, which our big rival, Dave was had a real big rivalry thing with the mm-hmm. Rapids. And got a call and said, you know, Dave would like to you and your wife to come to meet him at his house after the game. Tuesday night. And I spoke to Kim and I said, this is what I think might happen. I'd like us to go there a little bit prepared. I think there's a potential that he's going to speed up this plan and ask me if I want to be the head coach. And we talked that through. And to her amazing credit, she supported that. And so we did go to the dinner, and that was the plan. It was, hey, you know, that idea that we had about, you know, year or 2 years and you being his assistant coach, that's out the door. And so now I'm removing him tomorrow as well as the GM, and I want to know if you want to become the head coach. If you don't, no problem. But, you know, what does that picture look like?
Wow.
Right? You know, now you're a guy that has this plan and you're getting towards the end of your career, and now they're going to bring in a new coach. I could be traded a day or 2 days later. At the end of the season, he may decide that he doesn't want me around, and I'm out the door, and I've missed that opportunity. And so we took it. We took it. And I think I would credit the lack of real knowledge about what that job looked like to that's why I took the job. Honestly, gotcha. I think if I had known what it was going to take to do that job properly and correctly, I probably would have said, you're crazy, man. I'm going to play another year and a half, and I'll figure it out then. But that lack of knowledge, that little bit of naivete, put me in a place where I said, let's go for it.
And then from there on, how do you build yourself into a coach? Who did you lean on as mentors?
I leaned on him, Dave Checkitz, actually. And as I said, he fired the GM the same day, and what he told me was, I'll be your GM. And so I leaned on him a lot, and still do, actually. I would say in all the people that have come across me in my adult life, I would say that he's probably my biggest mentor. I leaned on my folks. They to me, represent people that have worked for everything they've gotten. They instilled that belief in me that if you want it bad enough and you're willing to work hard enough, you can do it. So I speak to them a lot about that. And there's one coach that I had when I was actually in Louisiana in under-19 soccer, that every time there was a tactical issue that I was a little bit at odds with or wanted mm-hmm. his thinking about that, I would lean on him, and still do. And then there's one more that just popped in my mind, because when I took the job, within a couple of weeks, I called a lot of I think all of the MLS coaches at that time, actually, I called all of them to get their thoughts on what I should do.
All up and down the list.
Yep.
All wow.
Everyone picked up and talked to
you? They did, absolutely, which I think that's fantastic. And I think I believe that would happen today. It still happened today. And the one that really stuck with me, kind of how he talked and how he continued to talk every time that I would go back with him, was Bruce Arena. And so even when I was looking through this opportunity, this last one that's come available to come to Orlando, I asked him his opinion on that. So he's somebody I lean on as well.
So you're in the job. You're trying to figure it out day by day, training session by training session, hour by hour.
Yeah.
There were some small successes, I'm sure, but I'm more interested right now in the moments where you said, what?
Yeah.
What, you know, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
What is this?
As I said, the naivete was what I think put me in the moment to take the job. And there was many, many.
What were times. The ones that stand out to you? Do you have moments where you...
I can't come up with like the particular instances, right. What I want to tell you is that there were many, many instances where I wanted to quit. 100%. I came home and said to Kim, this is it. I'm done. I can't do it anymore. I just am not getting what I want out of it. And my particular struggle through that first, what was it, a year and three quarters, really, all the way through 2007, right? I think mm-hmm. we won 5 or 6 games that year. We were terrible. I mean, we were horrible. And then we made 25 out of 28 changes in the off season. But what people don't know is the next year we made the playoffs. we barely made the playoffs.
We were
like, you know, we would be really good one game, and the next game would be terrible, and then we'd be good for two games and terrible for four games. And we were so up and down, and there were so many times through 2007 and 2008 where I said, I can't do this anymore. Because I'm a person that wants to feel like if I put X amount of energy in, I'm going to get Y amount of success out. And I felt like there were some times where I was putting 10 times X in and would get negative Y out. And I just wanted there to be some
this
correlation.
This calculus is not adding up for me right now.
Yeah, I just wanted there to be some correlation. But and again, not to be cheesy or anything, it was my wife that said, no, you're gonna see this out. And particularly in 2008, where it got to a point where I just was thinking, this is it. She said, I just want you to finish the season. Just finish the season. Well, we made the playoffs. We didn't just make the playoffs. We made it to the conference final, and I would argue we should have made the MLS Cup that year. We lost at home to the Red Bulls, and we must have hit the post 17 times and had another four or five chances to score that we should have, and I think we should have been in that MLS Cup final.
Well,
so from that moment on, it's been like, okay, there's something here. It just maybe takes a little longer than I would like it to.
Let's say that you hadn't stuck with it. What would Jason Christ be doing outside of soccer?
Jason Christ would probably still be involved in soccer, whether it's, you know, at a professional level or a youth coaching level. I think probably would have been talked into probably again because I had never done it before, but maybe some sort of a management level position, scouting position. I think I'd be involved in soccer still, no doubt.
It's interesting to hear you talk about kind of the fraternity among coaches. Mm-hmm. We've heard it from a couple other guys here, and it's not just coaches, I think, and it's players too. And is this league weird in that sense? Because I think you look around other places, maybe in other businesses, maybe not in sports, and you see some of that competition maybe not always be friendly. And I know it's not on the field, and sometimes when you're going after the same players, but do you think it's, you know, these coaches together, is it, what is it about that relationship? What is it about your jobs that kind of bring you together in that sense?
Well, I think there's a small piece of all the coaches in this league. Some coaches it's very small. Some coaches it's maybe a little bigger, and other coaches maybe it's massive, that recognizes it's not just about how my team does. It's about how the league does. And I think that all of us take some level of collective pride and ownership in how the league does. And if that's the case, then in fact we all are still working together and pulling in the same direction to some level or another. I would say the businesses is completely different because competing businesses probably have no collective interest about pulling together for some bigger thing here, which is the league and U.S. soccer, which I think we all want our national team to do well, and we all want to see U.S. soccer continue to do well. So I think it's different from that aspect. And if it's different from other leagues around the world, I don't know. I haven't been involved in enough of them to be able to tell you that.
Let's talk about your team, this league, 2017, Orlando City, a new stadium opening, an exciting season for the club, no doubt. You came in the middle of last year and fell just short in the playoff chase.
Yeah.
You came in, you evaluated the job. What did you see? What do you see now? What have you been focusing on for the past 6-7 months to get yourself in the place that you are right now?
Yeah, I mean, from a club perspective and an opportunity perspective, what I saw then is very much now starting to happen. What I saw then was, you know, this is a club that's going to have a brand new stadium with grass. This is a club that's going to have a brand new training facility. This is a club that already has an academy from bottom to top and a USL team, OCB, connected with the first team that will at some point be under the same umbrella, under one training facility. So, and it's a club that's very relevant in the community. And has a fantastic fan base. And so all of those things that I saw from the outside are very much real now. The stadium coming together and that some of that's still in the future, but you feel like it's right there. And so it's such an incredibly exciting time to be a part of Orlando City right now. And that's the message that we're trying to convey to our players. The staff feels it, the people that are in the office feel it, and we want to make sure that the players know that this is a special time and a special opportunity to be a member of this club, and we want to translate that into a winning club as well. And I think that this is the time, this is the opportunity, and it feels right. From a team point of view, We need to improve. There's no doubt about it. You know, we look at the number of points that we put together over the time that we took the job, and you do the math and add that up over this, put that over 34 games, and you can say we make the playoffs. Yeah, but barely. I mean,
yeah.
and we want to put ourselves on a little bit more sure ground than that. And so we have identified some clear things that we need to improve on, and we're addressing those things, both what we do in the off season. And how we handle the preseason, I think, is incredibly important as well. It's not just about the players all the time. It's about working those players together and really getting a firm understanding and coaching the players so that they can do what you want them to, so that you don't have to feel so stressed during the 90 minutes.
In March of 2017, you guys are going to kick off at home against NYCFC. 2 years ago, you were on the other side of that.
Mm-hmm.
That Citrus Bowl experience, I mean, we all watched that game. Geez. We were all so excited.
Yeah.
Could you imagine that you'd be on the other side 2 years later? And no. What do you remember from that day?
No, not one piece of me thought that that I would be anywhere other than still coaching New York City at the beginning of 2016. I would have thought at the beginning of 2015. I would have thought for sure at the beginning of 2017 I'll still be with New York City. But the memories of that day, I think the first one that jumps out at me is just kind of driving to the game and driving really early. As a coaching staff, we would always go at least an hour to an hour and a half before the rest of the team. So we're there 3 hours before kickoff, and just the amount of purple everywhere, you know, on the drive, on the streets, in the city, between the airport to the hotel, the signs, and it seemed like the whole city had adopted purple as its official color. And the number of purple shirts and the number of people that were already around the stadium and the buzz that was there, I thought was, this is amazing. I mean, we're talking about this is a first-year expansion team. This is their very first MLS game. This isn't a team that has had a history and a culture of what is the environment around a game before a game look like. So I'm really, really impressed.
You have a lot of purple now? You had to go invest? Maybe.
I don't know if you could tell. There's a slight shade of purple.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a little blue in that one.
Yeah, I'm a little neurotic, I think, when it comes to that. I remember at RSL, when I left there, I must have had, I don't know, 20 or 30 red and blue shirts and at least 30 or 40 red ties. And then to go to New York.
Did those go in the trash?
Man.
That's a Goodwill?
We'll get there. And then New York, I had everything light blue. And I did not own, this is true, I did not own one piece of purple clothing. And then when I got the job, went to the store.
Yeah, I think it works. I think it'll work for you.
You're walking out, and you've got three or four purple items here, four, five, six purple items, and the clerk is looking like, what is wrong with this guy?
Yeah.
And my wife had to explain this is because of his job.
Felt the need. She's like, look, I'm with him.
Yeah,
but
I think that was it. Yeah. I think she was trying to explain away how weird I looked. but yeah, now I have a lot of purple items, and I think that again goes to my neuroticism about, I don't know.
It's a strong color.
Yeah.
It is a strong color.
Yeah.
Your
but also just
be
kind of, it's, I love the club. I absolutely love it there. I love the community. I love the club, and it's part of me.
Let's talk about the team. You mentioned improvement. Where's that coming? It's been a little bit of not a slow start for the offseason. I think the big thing this year that people are looking at are like, oh, man, Atlanta United is making so many moves. Well, yeah, they have to build a whole entire roster here.
Yeah,
so
where
do you stand in your roster building? Are more moves coming? Are high-profile moves coming?
I would tell you that the amount of work that's been done in the scouting department and trying to do deals and those sorts of things that's been happening that people don't know about is record high for me. Record high the hours that we've put in to scouting and making decisions and all those sorts of things. But realizing that we have a lot of good players already. This is I think a very good team. I feel like it is very close. I think the points, you know, the points that are on the table are a pretty clear indicator that we are close. We were 1 point away. And so I don't feel like it's a team that needs to be drastically overhauled. This isn't Real Salt Lake between 2007 and 2008. We don't need 25 or 28 changes. That team had, you know, was a long way away. This team is not a long way away. And so we have gone in with a very clear idea of the players that we need to find, the positions that we need to address. And I feel like we've addressed all those positions except one. And that signing, I believe, will happen. It's just a matter of when it will.
We got to ask you what that one is.
And
positionally,
you would expect an answer.
No,
well, no, we got to ask. So, I mean,
you know, just like enough. Your job, we have to do.
Sometimes you got to shoot 40 yards from goal.
I
sometimes you just
got to
try it.
I appreciate your ambition.
You talked about the talent on the team. Kaká is always going to come up. He's a special personality in the world of soccer.
Yeah,
he's a special player. What's been your interactions with him? What is his presence like around this club?
Yeah,
around the movement when you talk to other players outside of the league and around the community.
You know, I think that it's interesting to think about players and kind of the snapshot that you have of them when you're outside the locker room and outside of working with those players than as compared to what it looks like when you're actually working with them. And I found there's so many occasions where what you think of a player from the outside point of view is drastically different than what it's like from the inside point of view. And so I would tell you that I looked at Kaká and read everything that he's said and watched the way he's demonstrated himself on the playing field, and I've always thought, man, that's he must be an incredible guy. He must be what a great pro and what a great guy. And he's saying all these things that are very supportive of the league at a very early time when it could have been very, I think, extremely easy for him to be just very frustrated with the level around him in Orlando in an expansion team. And so I thought all those things were true, and they are 1,000% true. He is fantastic. He is absolutely fantastic to work with. He is intelligent. He has a great tactical mind. He has, I think, a great idea of what we need to be a successful team. And he's just great to work with, really, really good to work with, really good to get feedback with, really good to ask opinions and talk about ideas, and I just couldn't be happier with him. And he smiles every single day. He's very happy to do a job.
He looks very
which,
happy.
You know, that's not easy to do if you think about the number of years that he's been asked to show up and perform at a high level in training sessions and. Our training sessions aren't easy. We ask a lot of our players, and we work them very hard, and he seems to be very happy with it. He enjoys that, and so that's important to me that he comports himself the way he does, because it's easy. It's easy for players to be led. It's easy for players to say, if he can do that every day, I should be able to do that as well.
He hasn't played necessarily 34 games in a season. Maybe that's part of its turf. There's been some injuries. There's been some up and downs. He hasn't scored 10 goals in a season yet. We've seen magic from him over and over and over. Maybe not as consistently as some people might have imagined it would be. Do you think that this year will be a year in which we see a dominant MVP-level Kaká? Is that something that maybe we're being unfair as outside folks looking in, asking for something like that?
You know, unfair and asking for it, I would say that's a little unfair. I don't think that we necessarily need to be asking for that or have an expectation of that. But do I think he's capable of it? Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that he now has a very clear idea of what we're looking for from him. And I know how he's been handling himself in the off season and the workouts that he's been putting in, because we monitor those things. And so I expect that we will be seeing a Kaká that is a different fitness level than maybe he has been in the prior two seasons in MLS. And from my point of view, if he's at the fitness level that I believe he will be, that could be a very scary thing.
Kyle Larin as well up top, another big star. You talk about what you see from outside from players and then the difference in the locker room. He's a quiet guy. We don't get to learn a lot about him. Uh-huh. Tell us a little bit about him as a personality, as a person.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah, you're right. He's a quiet guy. He's really, really subdued a little bit and quiet. But for me, there's quiet as like guys that just don't want any part of that. And there's quiet because of a reason, and because that's because they're focused. And I think Kyle is very, very focused on improving himself right now. And I think that we as Orlando City and as a club and as a team are poised for something special as well, because now you have a player that has experienced some frustration in his first year. What did he score? And it all seemed too easy, honestly. And then through a good portion of this year, it was the same thing. And so you have a young player that has, I don't think, had experienced any real professional downturn. And now we've had that. You know, I think clearly, I don't think he would disagree with us if he was sitting at the table. We have a player that's his level dropped a bit in the second half of the season. And so now I think we have a hungry player that wants to show that what was represented in the second half isn't necessarily what Kyle Larin's about or what his potential is. And I think his potential is still even higher than any of us have seen. And so I think that we're poised to gain, again, a guy that's really hungry. We're poised to gain the benefits of a player, a special player with special ability and an incredible amount of potential coming off of a little bit of a disappointment.
Breck Shea's a guy, when I hear you say those words, that I think of that's had those downturns in his career and now is trying to come back and prove that he's the guy that we thought he was maybe 5-6 years ago when he was one of the bright, shining stars of Major League Soccer.
Yeah.
How do you go about working with a guy like that? Is that exciting to you to say, hey, this is a guy with a ton of physical potential that just needs a couple breaks, needs some consistency?
Yeah. I would say that you know, again, we're monitoring what our players are doing in the off season, and we know.
Are you getting emails? How are you monitoring this? Are they know, like every time, every meal they eat? Yeah.
Don't worry.
You have a team of drones?
No. Breck is a player that actually stayed in Orlando and has been working with our fitness coach and also working with our nutritionist. And he is incredibly fit right now. Again, and I think to a different level even than Kyle, is a player that is very, very hungry, and I think recognizing that this is a critical time in his career, a critical time in his career, because there has been too many setbacks, and it's time. It's time now to show what you're capable of. He is a player that after I got there, he was going through a little bit of a disappointing time from my point of view as well. And we take a lot of a pride in the personal development of our players as well. It's not always just about the team. We also want our players to do well, and spoke to him, and he actually asked for more work. I'd like to train more, coach. I'd like to, you know, we had a break coming up, and some of the guys had days off, and he wanted to come in and train. We did that, and then I felt like he was coming on. Immediately after that break, he started against Montreal. He scored a goal. We win in that game. We go to the LA Galaxy shortly after. He comes off the bench, scores a great goal. Could have scored two goals. He was amazing in his 15 or 20 minutes. And then, so now I'm thinking, here we go. We're gonna see what Breck Shea is all about. He's gonna show us again what he's capable of. And we go into the next match, and he's clearly starting for us all week. He's in the team, and we get to the end of the week, and he injures himself. It was really, really disappointing because I felt like we were right at the cusp of something special. And that injury took him right through the end of the season. And so now I think it'll be the time. I'm expecting big, big preseason from Breck, and we're expecting big, big things from him this year.
You said you think that the roster is close to where it needs to be a successful club, but when I look at your depth chart, man, central midfield is packed, or at least it feels packed on my part. Do you see that when you look at that? Are there possible moves coming there?
I do see that it's packed. I do see a lot of players I like, and I don't know that that's necessarily a problem. I'd like to have that same situation in every position on the field, and I think, you know, I hope it's not going to be too long from a salary cap point of view, or we can see that type of depth at every single position on the field. So for me, that's the objective. Could it mean a management issue for me? It could. And so we'll see. We'll see where that takes us.
March 5th, NYCFC. What's the emotions going to be for you facing off against them to open the season, open the stadium?
Yeah, the opponent for me, I'm past that. I'm done with it. I let that go. I let that go last year. And so for me, NYCFC is no more special than the Red Bulls or anybody else. And so for me, it's all about the experience. This, as I said, this is a special time in the history of this club, and that's going to be an amazingly special occasion. But I'm just looking forward to what we can do. And again, we're very, very focused through the preseason to get things right, to really do our work, to make sure that our players are ready for the entire season, but in particular that first game. First game of the season in a brand new stadium, we want to win.
Last one for you here, got to have the win. You're going to walk out there, you're going to experience all the little perks for the first time. Of course, the fans will have what they want. We know everyone loves renderings. I love renderings, but now it's real. It's right in front of you. You got a beautiful stadium to move into. forget the fans. They'll have great amenities. Not forget the fans. They'll have a great time. Let's focus on the fans. But let's focus on what you guys are going to experience. What's your favorite part of the stadium from a coach's perspective, from a player's perspective? Yeah. What are the little things behind the scenes that we don't see but you'll love?
Difficult to say. I was there roughly a month ago, something like that, when we brought Will Johnson down to talk to him about coming to Orlando. We took a tour of the stadium, and it's not complete, so it's kind of difficult to say exactly what's my favorite part of the stadium. I think
are there features maybe in the locker room?
Listen, the wall, right? I mean, I think that's an amazing concept and an amazing idea. And I think that that could provide us a really, really special atmosphere. For me, it's all about, you know, it's all about how our fans can help us. You know, how can we tie them into our club, show them the requisite amount of appreciation, I think, because we really, really value. I really, really value that. My time at RSL, I felt like it wasn't always that way, but towards the end of my time there, I felt like we did have a very clear 12th man. And I hope, and I think it's to some degree already there. I mean, we had an amazing fan base. They're incredibly loud and supportive. But put them in the right atmosphere in a 25,000-seat stadium, I think it could become unbelievable. And that's what I hope. I hope that the stadium is the right atmosphere and the fans bring the right amount of energy, and that we can reward them for their energy and their support and their passion with the right product on the field.
March 5th can't come soon enough. 2017 is coming for Orlando City and Jason Kreiss. Jason, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
So glad that nobody can monitor my cheat days and when I skip my workouts.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. Good luck, Coach.
Thank you.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.